This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Pete's Coffee and Tea, celebrating 40 years with the arrival of Anniversary Blend Coffee and Tea. Portland locations on the web at PEETS.com.
Good morning. This is the KBOO Morning News for Monday, May 8th, 2006. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Jake Wallner.
Coming up on the news at 7 a.m., Republican gubernatorial candidate Kevin Mannix is in ethical trouble again, this time with the Oregon State Police Association. A prominent Republican legislator says Bush's CIA nominee is the wrong man at the wrong time in the wrong place. The United Nations humanitarian chief was forced to leave a refugee camp in Darfur by demonstrators demanding the deployment of UN peacekeepers. Portland area weather today, mostly cloudy this morning, clearing partially in the afternoon, partly sunny later in the day, temperatures 55 to 60. Tonight, mostly clear, patchy fog after midnight, colder 35 to 40. The Oregon State Police Association is apparently not campaigning on behalf of Republican gubernatorial candidate Kevin Mannix. That was in doubt last week when phone messages from Mannix's campaign for governor listed a wrong number on caller IDs. While the message urged voters to cast their ballot for Mannix, the caller identification showed the phone number of origin to come from the police association. Mannix campaign manager Stan Pulliam says it was a simple auto-dial glitch. He says auto-dials are usually reliable, but the system is programmed with an incorrect phone number. The Oregon State Police Association began receiving complaints Thursday and referred all questions to the Mannix campaign. Pulliam says the Mannix campaign sent volunteers to the Oregon State Police Association to help them field extra calls associated with the error.
Jared Gunther is 18, tall and lanky. He will graduate from Marshall High School in June. Girls think he's cute until they try to talk to him and he stammers or just stands there silent. Diagnosed with autism at age 3, Jared is polite but won't talk to people unless they address him first. It's hard for him to make friends. He lives in his own private world. Jared Gunther didn't know there was a war raging in Iraq until his parents told him last fall, shortly after a military recruiter stopped him outside a southeast Portland strip mall and complimented him on his sneakers. His parents weren't worried. They figured the army would never take Jared. Last month, Jared came home with papers showing that he not only had enlisted, but also had signed up for the army's most dangerous job, cavalry scout. He is scheduled to leave for basic training August 16th. Officials are now investigating whether recruiters at the U.S. Army recruiting station in southeast Portland improperly concealed Jared's disability, which should have made him ineligible for service. Jared's story illustrates a growing national problem as the military faces increasing pressure to hit recruiting targets during an unpopular war. This from the Oregonian.
The Cascade Locks Casino, proposed by the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs, isn't the only large development getting attention in the Columbia River Gorge. According to the Salem Statesman Journal, across the river in Washington, a timber company wants to transform its derelict mill site into the largest resort ever built in the federally protected area. Broughton Lumber Company hopes to upscale amenities and provide easy river access that will draw windsurfers, other active travelers, and homeowners to the site. But the plans require a rewrite of the rules that guide development in the Columbia River Gorge National Scenic Area, making a contentious and lengthy debate likely. Broughton's former planing mill straddles Washington State Route 14, just downstream and across from Hood River. It also bumps up against the Spring Creek Hatchery State Park, known as the Hatch, perhaps the most popular windsurfing and kiteboarding site in the gorge, with nearly a quarter of a million visitors in 2004. Broughton wants to replace that with what it calls Broughton Landing. 260 houses, condos, cabins, and townhomes. a central lodge, hiking trails, a restaurant, and a private windsurfing beach for resort guests only on 60 acres.
The Ashland House, owned by the Oregon chapter of the Al-Haramain Islamic Foundation, was sold in the past week, according to the Salem Statesman Journal. The sale marks breaking the last link between the city and the Islamic charity accused of supporting international terrorism. Realtors working for the U.S. Treasury Department sold the home at auction to two Ashland women who lived nearby. The purchase of the house puts Al-Haramain in Ashland's past. Tom Nelson, a Portland attorney and acting agent for the defunct charity, says Al-Haramain, as an entity, can't revive itself and do business again for no other reason than the specter of fear that the government has created. The government designated Al-Haramain Islamic Foundation a terrorist organization in 2005. Once it was designated as a terrorist organization, only people such as Nelson, who has federal approval, could conduct business with Al-Haramain. The auction of the home drew more than 50 people, including some who came solely out of curiosity.
Last week, a judge ruled that a redevelopment project involving Portland's Urban Renewal Agency does not have to pay state-imposed minimum wages for construction workers. The Bureau of Labor and Industries had claimed that private construction projects receiving tax money and under government control should pay so-called prevailing wages. But the Portland Development Commission contended it did not control the construction project at issue. Multnomah County Circuit Judge Henry Cantor agreed with the commission and rejected the prevailing wage claim. At stake was $225,000 in additional wages. Developers were concerned the case would set a precedent that could boost the cost of future public-private redevelopment and affordable housing projects. The Development Commission sued the Oregon Bureau of Labor and Industries after the state agency said the prevailing wage must be paid for a Northeast Portland project.
Workers who smoke marijuana at home for medical purposes risk losing their jobs unless they meet a strict definition on whether they are disabled. The Oregon Supreme Court ruled last week in a decision that supports employers with strict drug policies. The court also said federal law trumps state law if there is any question about marijuana in the workplace. The case was filed by a former millwright at the Columbia Forest Products plant in Klamath Falls. But Columbia Forest Products has a strict zero-tolerance policy that required urine tests which showed Washburn had been using marijuana. A trial court sided with the company, saying that Washburn was not disabled under Oregon law because prescription medicine offered him relief from the leg spasms. The Oregon Court of Appeals overturned the lower court, ruling the definition of disability had to be interpreted more broadly. The Oregon Supreme Court rejected that reasoning, siding with the trial court.
Lured by sunny skies and minus tides, clam diggers flocked to Newport's Agate Beach last weekend for the rare chance to net their daily limit of 15 razor clams. High domoic acid levels have kept many coastal beaches closed to clamming since 2003, but the beaches north of Newport to the Washington border are now open. Beaches south of Newport's North Jetty to the California border remain closed as testing continues to determine levels of domoic acid, a toxin produced by algae and stored in the fat of razor clams. Thank you, Oregon State Fish and Wildlife. Republican has come out against the front runner for CIA Director General Michael Hayden. The chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Peter Hoekstra, said the spy agency should not have military leadership during a turbulent time among intelligence agencies. Members of the Senate committee that would consider President Bush's nominee also expressed reservations, saying the CIA is a civilian agency and putting Hayden atop it would concentrate too much power in the military for intelligence matters. Bush is expected to nominate Michael Hayden today to replace Porter Goss, who abruptly resigned on Friday. Opposition to Hayden is because his military background is mounting on Capitol Hill, where he would face tough hearings in the Senate Intelligence Committee. If Hayden were to get the nomination, military officers would run the major spy agencies in the United States, from the ultra-secret National Security Agency to the Defense Intelligence Agency. The Pentagon already controls more than 80% of the intelligence budget. Hayden has been one of the most ardent defenders of the Bush administration's domestic spy program and secret prisons.
CIA Director Porter Goss resigned Friday amid allegations that he and top aide may have attended Watergate poker parties where bribes and prostitutes were provided to a corrupt congressman. Kyle Dusty Fogo, the number three official at the CIA, could soon be indicted in a widening FBI investigation of the parties thrown by defense contractor Brent Wilkes, named as an unindicted co-conspirator in the bribery conviction of former Representative Randall Duke Cunningham, law enforcement sources said. A CIA spokeswoman said Fogo went to the lavish weekly hospitality suite parties at the Watergate and Westin Grand hotels, but just for poker. Intelligence and law enforcement sources said solid evidence had yet to emerge that Goss also went to the parties, but Goss and Fogo share a fondness for poker and expensive cigars, and the FBI investigation is continuing. Larry Johnson, a former CIA operative and a Bush administration critic, said Goss had a relationship with Dusty and with Brent Wilkes that's now coming under greater scrutiny. Goss's inability to handle the allegations swirling around Fogo prompted John Negroponte to press for the CIA chief's ouster. The official said Goss is not an FBI target, but there is an impending indictment of Fogo for steering defense contracts to his poker buddies.
After Tom DeLay claimed that 22 Democratic lawmakers had ethics problems on a Sunday morning talk show, DNC Chairman Howard Dean fired back at the congressman indicted on money laundering charges. This according to Raw Story. Earlier on the show, DeLay claimed that every leader in the Democratic Party had ethics problems, including House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi and House Democratic Whip Steny Hoyer. George Stephanopoulos quoted from an email sent by Republican Chairman Ken Mellman warning that the Democrats were planning to impeach President Bush if they win in November. Then Dean responded that aside from investigating the culture of corruption, that wasn't true. Dean said that the culture of corruption has traveled as high as the White House and the office of the vice president. This from Raw Story.
Congress is taking its first steps to oversee the Defense Department's rapidly growing activities in the foreign and domestic intelligence fields, focusing also on the growing practice of contracting out intelligence analysis to former military personnel. The House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, in its version of the fiscal 2007 Intelligence Authorization Bill, has called for enhanced reporting requirements on the counterintelligence field activity, CIFA, the Pentagon's newest and fastest-growing intelligence agency. While the House Armed Services Committee approved an unusually large Pentagon request to increase by 50 the number of super-grade defense intelligence senior executive service personnel, the Senate Armed Services Committee last week ordered expanded reporting on defense contractor employment of former senior Defense Department officials and interagency contracting. At a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on May 2nd, John Gannon, a former CIA Deputy Director for Intelligence and later the first Staff Director of the House Homeland Security Committee, joined others who have raised questions about the growth of contracting and its possible negative effects. The House Intelligence Panel said one trigger for its study was the disclosure that CIFA failed to follow policies regarding the collection and retention of information about U.S. persons. This from the Washington Post.
British Foreign Secretary Jack Straw was fired last Friday by Prime Minister Tony Blair in a wide-ranging cabinet shuffle a day after the Labour Party took a pounding in England's local elections. Straw had regularly described military action against Tehran as inconceivable, a word neither Blair nor U.S. leaders would use. Two London papers have speculated this weekend that complaints by President Bush forced a British minister from his position because of his opposition to the use of nuclear force against Iran. The Independent suggests that a phone call from the U.S. President to British Prime Minister Tony Blair led to the removal of Foreign Secretary Straw. The newspaper reports that friends of Straw believe Bush was extremely upset when Straw pronounced any use of nuclear weapons against Iran nuts. Both The Independent and The Guardian write that Straw's fate was sealed after a White House phone call to Blair. Straw played a key role in more than 2 years of talks between Tehran and the European trio of Britain, France, and Germany, aimed at resolving the standoff over Iran's nuclear program. Negotiations broke down earlier this year when Iran said it was resuming its uranium enrichment activities.
A tractor trailer carrying low-level radioactive items rolled over yesterday on Interstate 40 in northern Arizona when it rear-ended another vehicle. The accident, which killed a passenger in the tractor trailer, was not threatening public health. The truck driver was critically injured and flown to a hospital. No other injuries were reported. The truck was carrying protective clothing, towels, tools, and other items used in processing radioactive material. The items, which contain low levels of radioactive solid metal oxide, were scheduled to continue their journey from Pacific Gas and Electric Company in Avila Beach, California, to a Westinghouse Electric Company service center in Madison, Pennsylvania.
Humanitarian chief hurriedly left a Darfur camp for displaced people today when demonstrators demanding the deployment of UN peacekeepers attacked one of his translators. A UN spokesman said he thought they had misinterpreted the message. Jan Eglin and his entourage cut short their visit to Kalma camp near the city of Nyala in South Darfur after the incident. Some of the 1,000 demonstrators in the camp manhandled the UN translator because they thought he'd incorrectly translated what they were saying. The translator was not injured, but colleagues put him into a van for his own safety. The demonstrators then broke the windows of the van and another vehicle in Eglin's convoy. A UN spokesperson said, "We did not evacuate. The program was cut short because tensions were much too high."
Iran renewed its threats to withdraw from the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty yesterday. President Mohammad Ahmadinejad said United Nations sanctions would be meaningless. The comments recalled the case of North Korea, which left the treaty in 2003. Last year, Pyongyang declared it had nuclear weapons, unlike Tehran, which says its nuclear program is only for generating electricity. Ahmadinejad said he would not hesitate to reconsider NPT membership. Iran's parliament made similar threats in a letter to United Nations Secretary General Kofi Annan, read on state-run radio. The letter said the dispute over Iran's nuclear program must be resolved peacefully, or there will be no option for the parliament but to ask the government to withdraw its signature from a protocol to the NPT allowing for intrusive inspections of its nuclear facilities. North Korea agreed last September to give up its nuclear program in exchange for U.S. aid and security assurances, but negotiations have been stalled since November, mainly because of Pyongyang's anger over U.S. sanctions for alleged currency counterfeiting and money laundering. North Korea escaped punishment by the U.N. Security Council, but Iran's possible departure from the treaty is likely to bring a tougher response.
Six North Koreans have been granted refugee status by the United States, according to the BBC. It's the first time the U.S. has accepted refugees from the country since it passed a law making it easier for North Koreans to apply. In October of 2004, President Bush signed the North Korean Human Rights Act, which offered U.S. support for human rights groups in North Korea and for refugees leaving the secretive state. Previously, they'd been treated as citizens of South Korea, which still technically claims sovereignty over the whole peninsula. Tens of thousands of North Koreans are believed to have crossed the border into China, but they face repatriation if caught by Chinese authorities.
Car bombs killed at least 16 people and injured dozens yesterday in Baghdad and a Shiite holy city. The violence cast doubt on U.S. hopes that formation of a new government alone would provide a quick end to the country's violence. At least 26 others were killed or found dead yesterday, including a U.S. Marine mortally wounded in the insurgent bastion of Anbar province in western Iraq. The deadliest single attack occurred at mid-morning when a suicide driver detonated his vehicle near an Iraqi army patrol, leaving its base in the Sunni Arab neighborhood of Azimaya, killing 10 people and injuring 15, most of them Iraqi soldiers. In Karbala, a Shiite holy city 60 miles south of Baghdad, a suicide car bomber exploded his vehicle near the main provincial government building, killing 5 people and wounding 19 others. Elsewhere, 3 policemen were killed in a roadside bombing in the northern city of Mosul, police said. Two bodies with gunshot wounds were found in the center of Mosul yesterday afternoon. U.S. officials have long contended that violence would subside if Shiites, Sunnis, and Kurds believed they had a stake in a new unity government representing all the nation's religious and ethnic communities.
British tactics in southern Iraq were under review last night as military chiefs studied whether the dramatic loss of an army helicopter at the weekend signified a new vulnerability in the air, as well as a growing hostility from Iraqis on the ground. This, according to The Guardian. Military investigators were combing the charred wreckage of a Lynx helicopter in central Basra, seeking to establish if it was the first British helicopter to be shot down since the invasion 3 years ago. The Ministry of Defense said a maximum of 5 British personnel were on board, but had yet to confirm a death toll. Basra residents said the jubilation at British misfortune stemmed from the city's descent into misery and warned that such confrontation was likely to recur. This from The Guardian.
The EU is preparing to go it alone and channel emergency funds to the Palestinians if talks with the US, Russia, and United Nations on setting up an international mechanism for easing their financial plight fail this week, according to The Guardian. Pressure for a swift agreement on supplying food and other aid directly to Palestinians, as well as money to pay the salaries of health workers and teachers, is intensifying. President Mahmoud Abbas and Ismail Haniyeh, Prime Minister of the Hamas-led government, failed to resolve the crisis over the weekend. According to a Brussels document, the crisis in Gaza and the West Bank could deepen in the next few months, leading to greatly increased unemployment and poverty levels and possibly the breakdown of law and order. The quartet of peace mediators, the EU, US, Russia, and the UN, will discuss in New York tomorrow plans put forward by Britain and France for the international mechanism to bypass both Hamas and President Abbas and provide funds and aid through bodies such as the World Bank, IMF, or the UN itself. Washington has resisted the idea of paying overdue salaries to workers in essential services such as health and education. Its tougher stance with Israel's backing is seen by some Palestinians as not so much an effort to change Hamas policies as to change the regime.
The new government in Nepal has annulled all the appointments made by King Gyanendra since October of 2002, according to the BBC. It has also recalled all the ambassadors appointed in that time. In that time, the government took office last month after the king ended his direct rule and recalled parliament following mass demonstrations against him. The administration has already annulled municipal elections of 3 months ago and says there will be a constituent assembly to rewrite the constitution. The new government and the Maoists have now agreed to a ceasefire. The government has agreed with a key rebel demand for an election that will form a constituent assembly, which in turn will rewrite the constitution, limiting the king's power.
Save the Children says young girls in Liberia are still being sexually exploited by aid workers and peacekeepers despite pledges to stamp out such abuse. Girls as young as 8 are being forced to have sex in exchange for food by workers for local and international agencies, according to its report. The agency says such abuse is becoming more common as people displaced by the civil war return to their villages. The UN in Liberia said it would investigate specific allegations. The United Nations promised to put safeguards in place after sexual abuse in the refugee camps of West Africa was first revealed 4 years ago. But a study by Save the Children, which involved speaking to more than 300 people in camps for people displaced by the war, found that abuse was still widespread. The report said that all of the respondents clearly stated that more than half of the girls in their locations were affected. This from the BBC.
BBC Science and Environment desk reports that the nanotechnology industry should disclose how it tests products containing nanoparticles. The Royal Society of the UK is saying that public information was needed because of uncertainties over the safety of some products that contain particles engineered at small scales. A new inventory of consumer goods lists over 200 items that are already available and contain nanotechnology. ENTA, the European Nanotechnology Trade Alliance, responded by saying that safety was its top priority. In 2004, the Royal Society and the Royal Academy of Engineering published a report that urged tighter controls in Europe and the UK on some aspects of the industry. In particular, it highlighted the potential risk of so-called free nanoparticles that might escape into the atmosphere and have an effect on health. For example, free nanoparticles are used in cosmetics and in some food supplements. A recent paper in the journal Nanoletters reported that experiments done to assess the risk of inhaling carbon nanotubes, a common manufactured nanoparticle, sometimes showed strong toxic effects and sometimes did not, depending on which methods were used. This from the BBC.
There have been many memorable moments in George Bush's career: invading Iraq, declaring mission accomplished, Hurricane Katrina. But the U.S. president recalled that his greatest moment in office had come not on the field of battle, but while out fishing. Asked by Germany's Bild and Sonntag newspaper what he considered to be his greatest triumph, President Bush replied, "I've experienced many great moments. It's hard for me to name the greatest." He went on, "I would say that the best moment of all came when I caught a 7.5-pound perch while fishing on my lake." Bush, who has not previously been noticed as a prize-winning angler, made his remarks during Angela Merkel's visit to Washington last week. In the interview published yesterday, he praised Germany's new chancellor, describing her as a very strong woman. Bush also said he had forgiven Germany for not taking part in the Iraq War. This from The Guardian. This has been the KBOO News for Monday, May 8th, 2006. Thanks for listening. This program was edited by Chris Andre. The tape stories were edited by KBOO volunteers. KBOO reporters contributed to this program. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Jake Wallner.
And I'm Chris Andre.
We clear the air at 90.7 FM Portland, 100.7 FM Corvallis on translator K264AA, 91.9 FM in the Hood River on translator K220HR. Portland area weather today, mostly cloudy this morning, clearing partially in the afternoon. Partly sunny later in the day, temperatures 55 to 60. Tonight, mostly clear, patchy fog after midnight, colder 35 to 40.